and welcome to the Beer Nuts Productions podcast. My name is Goff, and today our special guest is a woman who is a psychologist. She has a book out. There's nothing this woman hasn't done. It's Donna Cameron. How are you doing, Donna?
Very good. How are you?
I'm very well indeed. Very well indeed. Now, let's get straight into it. Now, you, like I said, you're a psychologist. Now, being a psychologist, I'm assuming that you have a very keen interest in people's behaviour, human behaviour, why we do what we do and don't do what we don't do. So are you able to, is that correct? And secondly, where did that interest sort of come from?
Yeah, no, definitely. And I think it all came from looking around at people even when I was young and kind of growing up and just trying to work out, you know, why we do what we do and why some people do it really well and why some people kind of don't do it really well. So that was sort of the main thing. And, you know, that made me kind of get more into it and want to help those people who don't do it well.
Cool. Fair enough. Is that because I've known Donna for a long while. Actually, if you want to know more about Donna, she was actually in the I Will Not Go Quietly documentary that Beer Nuts Productions did back in 2010, which is when I first met Donna. So if you want to learn a little bit more about her thoughts after you've listened to this podcast, obviously download that film at the Beer Nuts Productions website, just shoehorning in a plug very unsubtly. So, like I say, I've known you for a long time. Is that why you're such a huge lover of reality television, like your Bachelor shows and all of that nonsense? Is that why you love it, for watching how people react to certain situations?
I think, look, there's a big joke that I kind of say to people with the reality shows. As you know, I do love my shows, and I think you've bought me a lot of stuff that is in my house because of all of the shows, but you haven't given me Jeff yet, so we're still getting to that.
And she's in love with Jeff from Survivor, I believe.
And look, very impressed that you remember. No, look, I think the reality shows is almost that other extreme of human behaviour. So the benefit that I have of that is I often say to people, I have to be nice to people all day and help people all day. And everyone always says, how do you do your job when you're surrounded by kind of, you know, grief and loss and anger and all of those feelings all day? Doesn't that drive you insane? And I say, well, no, I go home and I watch my reality TV shows. And sometimes that's the opportunity I get to laugh at human behaviour and I don't have to help them. So they're not on, they're not paying me. So I kind of just get to almost do what the rest of the world gets to do and be a little bit picky and mean and all of those things. So that's a bit about my outlet, I guess, not so much a therapy style learning tool.
It's probably good to know.
Yeah.
Now, I've spoken to your receptionist a few times and they said one thing that I thought was really, really interesting. And they said that when people come to see you for the first time, they're freaking out and some people are even shaking and in tears and are just petrified about the fact of going to see a psychologist. Can you maybe talk a little bit about that? Maybe put people's minds at ease that you're not, you know, going to, I don't know, anally probe them or something of that nature?
Is that also you trying to call all the time to get those appointments that you're banned for?
Yeah.
Okay. Look, I think when people first come in, and when I first started even, you know, 17 odd years ago, I remember I was about to start my first clinic and the first thing I did is I went and bought all of these suits. So, you know, it's a long time ago, but I went into Q and Victoria Main, probably brands that you know well.
Oh, yeah, I wear that stuff all the time.
Yeah. And I spent back then $500, $600 on these suits and had the office all perfect and I had my folder and my notebook. And the first people that walked in, you could see that they just kind of looked at you a little bit like, you're looking too perfect. You know, I'm coming in here and I'm a mess and I'm lucky to have probably put my tracksuit on and you're kind of in this stiff kind of suit, not looking comfortable. So I probably got rid of those and they stayed in the back of my wardrobe for the next 17 years and just kind of went casual. And when people come in, it's just, I like people feeling like it's just a chat initially to just get to know them. And as soon as they can walk in and they've got that fear and you can settle them down, most of the time when they leave and they walk out, you can also hear them with the receptionist sort of saying, wow, like it just felt like talking to a friend, or she was just really helpful and really caring. I don't send them home with billions of pieces of paper and things to read. So, you know, most of the times these days people just want to talk and they just need someone to kind of get them on the right track with some scripting and some behavioural things. And that's how you calm them down and make them feel comfortable.
So the key takeaway would be for people not to freak out, and seeing a psychologist isn't something that they need to fear pretty much, yeah?
Yeah, we're just normal people and we're really there just to help them through some issues that from their friends, they might get their friends, you know, kind of talking to them and, you know, talking about the problem more and just kind of, you know, saying, oh, well, that's crappy or that. They can't give them the solutions to help them with their thoughts. We're just doing that last little bit. So it's relaxed. It's not complicated. Our complicated cases workers, they go off to, you know, the psychiatry. They're off in more of that mental health kind of facilities. That's the people that are portrayed in the movies. I don't see those people, you know. My people are just normal people who just have a couple of little issues that they want to talk about.
Fair enough. All good. And now, like I said, you do have a book out called Stress Cup.
Yep.
So tell us a little bit about the book and where folks can grab a copy.
So basically the How to Manage Your Stress Cup came from, again, when I was early days, everyone was coming with the very different content, but the emotions and the symptoms that we're pushing through were always really different for everybody. And it made me really think, looking at the different ages as well, that our kids did emotional regulation and mental health really, really well. And as adults, we kind of really stuffed it up. So Stress Cup came from that. It wasn't a uni thing. It wasn't, you know, a learned thing. It was purely just going, what are people doing wrong? And we were able to break it into a couple of categories. And it's a really quick, snappy kind of little book. It's got pretty pictures, so, you know, people can look at the pictures as well. And it just really reminds people of those basic things that you need to do in your life. In that first session, I often go through that with clients, but as you said before, a lot of the times they're really nervous. So we find that by having Stress Cup and, you know, it's a couple of dollars that they can then buy afterwards, mm-hmm. they've got that in their hand. And so for the next few days or even, you know, once a week or once a month, they can look back and just kind of, you know, remind themselves. So it's out there, it's on the web, and you've just got to Google my name, Donna Cameron, and Managing Your Stress Cup, and it will come up and it can go onto your iPhone, your Kindle, you know, Amazon, any of those ways. It's all out there.
So do you want to go a little bit more into what is a stress cup?
So the stress cup basically is what I call our emotional hub. So just like we've got our heart and our lungs and our organs and all of those sort of things, I call our emotional hub a stress cup. So, you know, it's a really nice, easy visual thing. I'm not a very visual person, so that even gives me something that I can see. Basically, any stress that happens in your life puts a couple of drops of fluid into that stress cup. The bigger the stress, obviously, the more fluid that fills it up. What I'm finding is that as we get older, we stop the release of that stress cup. So obviously it's going to get to the point that it starts to overflow, and then we're in a world of pain emotionally. That then goes on to affect our mental health, to give us things like, you know, anxiety, depression, all of those sort of things. So in my view, even things like anxiety, it doesn't have to be a problem. It's actually just our body screaming at us and kind of saying, hey, you've kind of ignored the small symptoms, which might have been, you know, your memory fading, your attention span, not feeling hungry, your sleep getting poor. You've ignored all of that stuff. And now these bigger ticket items, you know, these bigger symptoms have to kick in to really grab our attention. You're not going to go to the doctor if you just, you know, feeling like your memory's gone a bit poor, or if you can't concentrate on a TV show, but you're going to go to the doctor when all of a sudden you feel like your heart's a problem or you can't breathe properly.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Cool. All right. Fair call. Now, I want to go through a couple of pretend scenarios with you, Donna. You know, a friend of mine, you know what I'm saying? So let's say, for example, you like that? Yeah. So let's say, for example, you've got a mate. Oh, I should probably preface this with, like, this is general advice, obviously. So if people out there are listening and this sort of applies to them, not to take it too literal, because it's very general advice. But I don't want to get angry emails. So she said this, how dare you, you know what I'm saying? But so let's say you've got a friend out there and you've noticed that friend is now, you know, they used to have a few beers on a weekend, but now it's getting every night, or they used to, you know, have $5 on the horses and now it's every day. You know, that they're starting to get into what you would consider dangerous territory. How would you bring up a subject like that with a friend? Because people, I would assume, I don't know, but I would imagine 9 times out of 10, people would be very defensive. So how would you talk to somebody about that so they don't, you know, tell you to fuck off, pretty much?
I think a lot of the times, if you're worried about your friend and you're seeing those behaviours, you've probably yourself got a bit of an idea of what a psychologist is and what mental health is. You might have seen it maybe in yourself. You might have seen it in family members for you to even be able to get triggered by that. So, yeah, you're 100% right. If you went to your mate and just said, hey, you crazy dude, you need to see a psych, like, probably not going to go down very well. I often find that any of those conversations going around the corner a little bit, and it's giving information. So it's not necessarily going, hey, you're drinking too much, because yeah. Again, they'll tell you where to go. But it's more so just maybe giving an example, you know, hey, you know, oh, remember my uncle such and such, he ended up seeing a psych. He was doing this and this and this, and it really helped him. And sometimes if you give a story about another area going on in your life or another person, then that person will subtly get the little cues and the hints, and they might then find out, you know, oh, who did he see, or what did he do that for, or what was that useful for? So a lot of the times, you know, that can be the first way that you could try. And then I think, again, you've got to be, if you're really concerned, I think we've also got to pull away a little bit of this, you know, the crap, and just basically be able to say to our friends, hey, I think there's a problem here, and I think you need to go and have a chat to someone. I'm here, you can talk to me, but I've heard that, you know, this is what these people are also for. So if you're worried about your friends, then don't be concerned to sometimes be a little bit then kind of, you know, straightforward as well.
And what about yourself? If you notice that you within yourself, you know, you were having those couple of beers and now all of a sudden you realise, oh man, it's been every night this week, you know, or whatever it might, anger or whatever it might be. If you notice something in yourself, what would be, I mean, obviously go and see a psych, but maybe you could tell us how you can see those behaviours within yourself maybe.
Yeah. So a lot of the things that I try and get people to do when we do therapy is really identify kind of the normal life things that you do every single day and that you do without issues. I'll often say to people, if you've got kids or you've got, you know, a partner or even just a friend that kind of is always in your life, if normally, you know, you can not be irritated by those people, you know, especially your kids. If you go home and they're doing something, you know, that they do all the time, but that one time you're kind of like, you know, you're doing the wrong thing, go, here's your consequence. But then maybe the next week you're kind of like, ah, you're a crazy person and, you know, there's no Santa Claus and that's it, you're grounded for life. You've really kind of got to stop.
Wait, there's no Santa Claus?
No, that was a threat.
Oh,
see?
Okay.
So they go really crazy. So that's, yeah.
Okay.
No, there's definitely Santa Claus.
Okay, good,
he's
good,
watching
good.
You right now.
Okay, good. Because, you know, my father, he went into the yard and he shot a gun in the air and then told me that Santa committed suicide.
Oh, but wow.
That's just my childhood.
See, but, and this is why Goff's trying to get a session again.
No, but sorry, go on, Donna, I interrupted.
No, but it is, it's those little things. So pick on the little irritations first, pick on those little frustrations that's just driving you insane. If you normally get up and go for a run at 5 o'clock in the morning or 5:30 in the morning and now you can't be bothered with that, or like you said, if the drinking's kind of normally weekends, but now, you know, or when, you know, Essendon's playing in the AFL and you really want to celebrate that team, you can really notice that that's going above and beyond that and starting to get a bit too much, then I think it's tracking that. So pay attention to those little symptoms. In the stress book, the symptoms I list are things like your memory, concentration, attention span, motivation, excitement levels, those sort of things.
So if you see those sort of things sort of waning, you need to sort of take a step back and go, oh, what's causing these things to happen? Is that sort of what you're getting at?
Yep. Yeah. Yep, exactly. So it's what's causing these things to happen. What am I not doing for myself? And I can promise you for probably about 98% of us, it's going to come back to you haven't had some downtime in your life. You're not doing like that battery phone charging. You're not doing a physical outlet to really tip out that stress. And you're also not focusing on those emotions and releasing those emotions.
Cool. Now, another pretend situation. So let's say, for example, grandma dies, right? She's dead. That's it. That's the end of grandma. Now, everybody's sad because grandma's dead, right? But you're thrilled because grandma was a raging bitch. Couldn't stand her. But everybody's sad, but you're not sad. But that's not normal because she's dead. Reconcile this for me, Donna.
Right.
How should...
Did she leave you money?
Well, I said she was a bitch.
So no money for you.
No.
Okay. So when you're feeling something that nobody else around you is feeling, then you have the right to feel that way. So you can go and have your excitement party. You can go and burn her clothes in private if you want to do that. What you need to do for others is purely just validate their emotion. So it's not your role to quickly go, you shouldn't be sad because grandma was a bitch. You need to then say, oh, that's okay. You're allowed to be sad. And that's it. Walk away and go and eat. There's lots of food at funerals. You like food?
Yeah, no. Wakes are great.
Yeah.
Apparently they're good for picking up chicks too, if the movies are anything to go by. Well, that's a very straightforward answer. I was hoping for something a bit more complicated. But anyway, never mind. You've let everybody down, Donna.
Oh, sorry. Told you, psychology actually does not have to be that complicated.
That's very true. It's probably a very good, important point to make, is that like when people come to see you, are they often amazed that you just say to them A, B and C and they're like, oh, shit, is that it? Is that sort of a general sort of, like, obviously, generally speaking, is that kind of something that happens a lot?
Yeah. So initially when you explain the symptoms and what they're probably feeling, you kind of get that moment where they feel like you've been stalking them for a little bit. And I haven't. I am really busy. I don't have time to do that.
Just Jeff from Survivor.
Yeah, just him.
That's a joke, by the way. There's a joke,
no,
obviously.
Stalking. Yeah. And he's in America, Goff. I can't get there right now.
That's very true.
Yeah, so they do leave sometimes kind of going, oh, is they get really excited. So normally that first session, they leave with this sense of, wow, this is fixable, and they're really, yeah, just going, excellent, I can make some changes. It's normally that second session. So they come back from that second session and they actually go, but there needs to be more. Why didn't you give me a book to read? Why didn't you give me a questionnaire? Like, there has to be more to this than actually what you're saying. And then when you say, well, how about we try it my way first? And then I promise you, if there's more to it, we'll figure it out as we go. Then it's getting that trust. And then for, again, 98% of them, it works. These simple strategies work. You've also then got the head stuff. So there is going to be, you know, the negative thoughts, the scripting, you know, patterns that they've created along the ways of telling themselves that they're, you know, hopeless, pathetic, useless. You've got to work on those as well. But I need that stress cup to have some room in it so then I can get to the head and then we can do that work.
And you touched on this a little bit earlier on, but what are some things that people out there can do before they see the psychologist, you know, to like diet, exercise, those sort of healthy outlets that folks can do that might just help them just calm down a touch before things do get a little bit out of control? What are a few basic sort of tips that people could take on board?
So if I give all these away, then I'll get quiet and then I'll have no...
Oh, no, well, I'll go around and, you know, annoy people so they okay. have to go and see you.
All right, cool. Yeah, no, look, as I said before, it's the three categories. So the simple thing of the exercise, and I call it a physical outlet because people are allergic to exercise. So a physical outlet needs to happen in your world and you can't get away with that. If you're a physical, you know, guy working on a work site, that does not count as your physical outlet. It can be as simple as a 10, 15-minute walk or it can be training for a marathon. Your body does not care, but it needs that release. You need to look into your sleep. It's a huge thing that's happening at the moment, especially with all the devices. You normally need about 1.5 to 2 hours of nothing in your head. You can read or watch TV, but nothing else that you're kind of fiddling around with, playing to activate the brain a couple of hours before you go to sleep. Otherwise, you're playing on these things, you're fatigued, you're falling asleep, but you're not getting into sleep. So you're waking up fatigued. The food is obviously, yep, really, really important just to make sure you are getting, you know, the fruit and vegetables and all the good foods, trying to avoid all the diet trends, just get some balance. All of those things. The biggest thing that I do find, though, is this emotional regulation. So if something pisses you off, you're allowed to be angry about it. So if that means you're driving home from a work meeting and someone's really annoyed you and you need to scream your head off and just swear and rant and rage, then you've got to do it because... This will match how, I guess, how you talk. I say emotions are very much like food. Once they're in, if we don't get it out, then it's stuck there. So if we eat and it doesn't come out the other end, we're in a world of pain and the emotions are exactly the same.
Well, I haven't farted in days and it's killing me.
So you need to let that out once I leave.
Once you leave?
Yeah, once I leave.
Okay, good news. Yeah. So I can finally fart.
Yeah,
okay,
once I leave.
Good news. All right. Yeah. Just emphasise the fact you have to be out of the studio.
Like out of the suburb.
Now we do have to wrap it up, Donna, but before we go, where can people find you? So if they want to know more about Donna Cameron, where can they go?
Yeah, so you can have a look at our website, thecouch.biz. We're also all over all of the socials, Facebook, Instagram, all of those ones. We have a location here on the Gold Coast and we've got our exciting move to Melbourne. So we'll be down there helping all of our Melbourne people very soon.
Very cool indeed. So ladies and gentlemen, that is Donna Cameron for this week's episode of the Beer Nuts Productions podcast. Please make sure you like and subscribe and follow and leave a nice comment because, you know, well, Donna will tell you as a psychologist, it's nice to be nice, isn't it, Donna?
It is nice to be nice.
There you go. See, so leave a nice comment and beernutsproductions.com for all your entertainment needs. So until next time, we'll speak to you soon.